Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
Federal funding is gone, and that changes everything. Every day this gap lingers, the shows and reporting you rely on are at risk. We've still got $200,000 left to close our funding gap. We're making progress, but we're not there yet. The programs and conversations you count on every day depend on your support. When you give now, you help close the gap and keep trusted, independent news here for Chicago. Make an affordable monthly gift online at wbez.org/donate.
Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. For our weekly news recap today, something a little different. We are in WBEZ's performance studio in front of a live studio audience. Welcome, everyone. So good to see your smiling faces. It's, of course, Friday. Time to catch up on what's been happening this week across Chicago and Illinois. We've got a great panel of local journalists in-house this morning to talk about stories like these.
Federal Judge Sarah Ellis wanted to know specifically about three recent events where ICE officers appeared to have used excessive force.
More tense moments between federal immigration agents and crowds of people in Little Village.
Identify yourselves. They don't identify themselves. They continue to wear masks, defying the judge orders.
Swapping out Illinois license plates on Illinois registered vehicles is illegal.
Our parishes and schools will not turn away those who seek comfort.
At the table to help me make sense of the week's news, Jake Sheridan, City Hall reporter for the Chicago Tribune, Revy Bashwal, who's an anchor of ABC 7's 5 and 6 p.m. newscasts, and joining us for the very first time on the weekly news recap is WBEZ's Race, Class, and Communities senior editor, Alexandra Solomon. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Good to see you. Now, this week we saw an escalation in immigration enforcement. We're going to start with some of the court cases and judges' rulings. Then we're going to move on to what is happening in different neighborhoods. On Monday, Judge Sarah Ellis ordered Border Patrol Chief Greg Bovino to sit for a deposition and to answer questions on agents' use of force in Chicago. Yesterday, attorneys accused Bovino of personally throwing tear gas at a crowd of protesters. Revy, do you think that Bovino will provide some answers under oath that could justify that use of force that we're seeing?
I think we've sort of been exposed to those kinds of arguments that we're going to be hearing probably from Bovino. I would think, of course, that they are going to respect the judicial process and speak as they see the truth to judges. And we have seen that time and time again, and we'll get into some of those stories in just a moment. But I do expect that they're going to say something along the lines of, well, we have to do what we have to do to protect our federal agents and our federal properties. And we've heard these arguments before, and they certainly appeal to a range of Americans who are very quite supportive, actually, of these kinds of activities.
Another federal judge, April Perry, she blocked the deployment of the National Guard in Chicago, but the Supreme Court could overturn that. Now, as we've seen before with this administration, they don't always adhere to judicial decisions. Alexandra, where does that leave us, though? Where does that leave the city of Chicago?
They don't always follow judicial decisions, but I actually think in this case, the Trump administration really wants this to go to the Supreme Court. So I think in this case, they are going to, follow the judge's orders. In the meantime, we haven't seen National Guard troops right out on the streets of the city.
That's true.
They want this to go to the Supreme Court because I think they believe there's a good chance the Supreme Court is going to rule in their favor.
Any idea when we might see that happen?
That's expected really within days. This is an emergency request, and it's expected to happen, within days.
Yeah, I heard from someone at City Hall and the mayor's administration, they thought 72 hours on Tuesday. So
okay.
It could be today. It could be really soon.
Could be any day now. Yeah. So as the city awaits that Supreme Court decision, we're also seeing an escalation in immigration arrests, right? So Border Patrol Chief Bovino joined those ICE raids in Little Village Wednesday, as well as yesterday. On In the Loop, we talked with Marcela Rodriguez, who's of the Little Village based in Lasse, Chicago, to get her reaction.
Our community is not what we're used to. It's a daily thing that there are agents terrorizing people. I don't even think that there is a plan of what they're doing. They just seem to be riding around like maniacs, putting people in danger. Yesterday, they were also driving in speeds that are not safe on one-way streets opposite direction. It's just like little kids that go wild. No order, no logic, and it creates chaos. Our community is unrecognizable.
Yeah, Alexandra, it's been a chaotic, and that's the word I keep using, right? It's been a chaotic couple of days on the city's streets, especially in the city's southwest side and neighboring Cicero. Fill us in.
Yeah, so, you know, as we just heard in that clip, Gregory Bovino, who heads up Border Patrol, was actually on site in Little Village in the last couple of days. And, you know, they've thrown tear gas at protesters. They arrested two staffers of the alderman. Both of them are American citizens. Now they were released, but, you know, after a number of hours,
right.
They took in two students.
Yeah,
from
two high school students.
Two high school students, one of whom a teacher confirmed is a citizen. He's 16. He was also gone for hours. You know, this, again, I think this chaos. So when they come in, they were trying to get into a mall. They couldn't get in. You know, the people who were interviewed at the scene by our reporters said they didn't seem to have a plan. They had just sort of shown up. And, you know, there has been, I think a lot of experts will tell you that this is a tactic. You go in, there's chaos, you sort of try to provoke a response from the community, and then you can say, see, there's lawlessness, so mm-hmm. we need to go in with military troops. Mm-hmm.
You know, I was talking with Alderman Rodriguez yesterday about what happened, and he said that for 7 hours he didn't know where his staffers were.
That's right.
And I think that drives home your point that the chaos, the uncertainty, is kind of the purpose of a lot of what's going on.
And Jake, you know, the residents in the Little Village, they're urging Mayor Johnson to enforce the ice-free zones executive order that he signed recently. What are they asking for exactly, and how is the mayor responding to that?
You know, the mayor pushed forward that executive order that federal immigration authorities wouldn't be able to use city property to stage. What they're calling for now is for that to be enforced, you know, for fences around parking lots, for actual enforcement if ICE agents do or Border Patrol agents do use those lots. It's a really tricky spot for the mayor where he doesn't want to have a confrontation between police and immigration agents. It's you know, it'd be a huge crisis for the city to try to arrest those officers, those agents of the federal government. So it's a really tricky spot.
It is. You know,
I can tell you that in reporting from Broadview, for example, where
yes.
you see all kinds of different police cars and law enforcement from Illinois State Police to local police to the village of Broadview to obviously the federal agents. And it's very interesting when you're there and nothing exactly is going on in terms of a protest or any kind of action, that a lot of these officers are kind of looking at each other and, in a way, to use a sports analogy, to try to understand, okay, which team am I on? That's my sense of things when I'm there. And there is a lot of confusion, and I think, to your point, that the confusion seems to be part of the strategy here. And let's not forget, there have been a lot of reports about the federal government's purpose in all this. Actually, one of the driving forces is there are quotas, apparently, to reach in terms of arrests, in terms of interactions, in terms of bringing people in. We have not seen anything official on that, but when you start to think of it that way, that, oh, I have to show that I'm productive because I have to make X number of arrests interdictions,
yeah,
that kind of confusion just adds to a real odd pallor of the way it feels with when you're sort of standing in a contested space with any range of law enforcement.
Well, you know, Ravi, you mentioned strategy, right? And what comes to mind for me is we're seeing, on top of the increasingly aggressive, I'll say, tactics being used here, a lot of this is being shared on social media. The guests I had on the show the other day from Little Village pointed out how, you know, this time around when Bovino was there, once again, so were the cameras and the drones. And, you know, he's looking this way, he's looking that way, trying to get that perfect angle. Are they shooting a reality show? Like, what is happening here?
Yeah, whose cameras?
Whose cameras?
Right.
Not my cameras. Not your cameras.
Right.
Right.
Not our cameras. Well, our cameras are there as well as everybody else that we
reporting the facts, but not, you know, the narrative that they're going to try to put out.
And then there are drones there.
Yes.
There's a range of equipment that is being deployed, and it's odd, it's new, it makes reporting fascinating when you're on the ground, but it's different.
I mean, they make highly produced videos with
yes.
music and a narration, and
yeah.
They have, you know, influencers that they tap and let know we're going to be in this place at this time, right? A number of right-wing influencers who
wow.
also are there shooting videos, so they are targeting certain audiences with that information that they want to get out in
mm-hmm.
a particular form.
Yeah, this week Judge Sarah Ellis also ordered that ICE preserve any body cam footage from their officers. Jake, we're also seeing Chicago alderpersons who are normally tasked with things like zoning issues and fixing potholes. They're now having to lead this fight against Trump's deportations.
Yeah, it's really been remarkable to see the intensity with which aldermen across Chicago are fighting what Donald Trump is trying to do with deportations in the city. A couple of them really stick out to me. I followed Alderwoman Rosana Rodriguez Sanchez in Albany Park. She has a system where she's protecting schools with folks a couple of blocks away looking out for ICE agents. And it's like 50 people per shift twice a day.
Just volunteering their time.
Yeah, at like a dozen schools. I mean,
organized by her.
Organized by her, organized by Graciela Guzman. And really, it's not a unique system in a way. That's kind of another remarkable thing, is there's systems like this all over the city, at schools all over. I mean, the CTU is working on similar stuff. CPS has methods of protecting kids, too. Alderman Andre Vasquez, I went to a training that he put on. He thought 300 people were going to show up.
Mm-hmm.
There were like 700 there.
Oh, wow.
And that was like 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. Now he's going to different wards where aldermen maybe aren't quite so ready to scale up that kind of thing and doing trainings for them.
Wow.
So this is happening all over the city. There's tons and tons and tons of efforts going on.
Well, yesterday, Alderman Sigcho Lopez, who represents Pilsen and part of Little Village, told us here on In the Loop that he plans to file lawsuits over what happened Wednesday. And Alder Jesse Fuentes has already filed a claim with the federal government for $100,000. This is in personal damages over her recent altercation with ICE agents. She's encouraging other people to do the same. Revy, I wonder, do you think that we're going to see more of these kinds of lawsuits?
I think we will, because there are going to be more incidents. And certainly the judicial system seems to be a refuge for those who are pushing back against the Trump administration in any number of ways. And I have seen also, if you take a hard look at it, with the Trump administration, as we talked a bit earlier, when it comes down to that judicial decision-making, the judicial process, they do actually listen to the decision at the end. Maybe they don't act on things as quickly as people would like, but they're not sort of completely and utterly ignoring what a final decision in the judicial system says they ought to do. So I would expect more of this, because we did a story the other day, and to your point, it was actually with Congressman Mike Quigley in the 5th District, and he was doing one of these Know Your Rights events. This was Monday night at Lakeview High School, and he expected, I don't think, 200, 300 people, and many more showed up. And I was talking to Ed Yonka from the Civil Liberties Union in Chicago, and he was at that event as well. And he said to me that when the arguments are put forward in a judicial environment about whatever the Trump administration is doing, they tend to lose, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that you will see people moving towards that a little bit more. I think you're going to see fundraising for legal efforts all around in this environment a lot more.
You know, I think something similar did happen too to this week. Governor Pritzker's Accountability Commission.
Yes.
And I think what they're trying to do, both with these lawsuits, with that commission, is create a public record, right? Where when Donald Trump is out of office someday, then you know, they can try to pursue whatever justice looks like to them with that public record.
Who knows when that'll be? Because isn't he going for a third term?
Fourth, fifth, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that is what's at stake here, right? The lawlessness, the people's constitutional rights being violated, U.S. citizens being caught up and detained, minors mm-hmm. being taken into custody, their parents aren't there, right? There have been a number of cases, and I think this is what is at the heart of this challenge, is
is the law being followed in these operations?
And I think people can feel that that seems to be what this is about.
Maybe so
our audience here, who are obviously civically engaged NPR listeners, I mean, this is what people think. Yeah, the fists go up. I think this is the sensibility, however refined your thought is about that, that drove so many people onto the streets last weekend for the rallies across the country. When people feel that their basic constitutional rights, their what they're supposedly God-given, are at stake or being eroded, they will rise up and protest that.
Hey, if you just got here, welcome. This is In the Loop. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and we are breaking down the biggest stories of the week with a panel of local journalists. We've got Jake Sheridan of the Chicago Tribune, Revy Beishwal of ABC7, and WBEZ's Alexandra Solomon. We've also got a wonderful studio audience here. Hey! Thank you so much for being here in WBEZ's performance studio. Jake, so immigration agents, right? They're not just clashing with city officials, as we've been talking about. This week, a state rep says that ICE agents pulled a gun on him?
Yeah, that's state rep Han Nguyen, and he said that federal agents pointed a gun at him as he was trying to alert folks in the Northwest Side that they were around. He said they got out of their cars, tried to communicate with him through a window, pointed a gun at him. He started filming after that. His video didn't capture that, but he had a really tense exchange with them that was captured. But this isn't the only kind of interaction like that with elected officials that's been happening. Alderwoman Rosana Rodriguez Sanchez, who I mentioned earlier, she had a similar interaction where she was following agents, and they pulled into an alleyway. She followed them into there, and they stopped. They got out of the car, and they warned her to stop following. They didn't share their names. They were masked, of course. And of course, we have Alderman Rodriguez's staff members being arrested too. So there's a lot of incidents like that.
Absolutely. Now, Secretary of State Alexei Janulius is the latest state official looking for ways to hold these agents accountable. He just created a tip line so that folks can report federal immigration agents tampering with license plates. Alexandra, tell us more.
This is direct response to some really dogged reporting by Lauren Fitzpatrick, Sun-Times reporter Lauren Fitzpatrick, and our photojournalists, who are actually, I'm sure people in our audience have seen the photographs.
Incredible. You
know, they are on scene. They're in the thick of things. They noticed cars coming in and out of the Broadway ICE facility that had no license plates or only had one license plate. Illinois law requires that you have a front and back license plate if your vehicle is registered in Illinois. There was an officer recorded saying, filming the license plate number of a car to try and track the car, because this is a way that community members are also warning people, right? They might say, there's a car with this license plate, it's ICE officers. The officer said, you can film that, it doesn't matter, we swap these plates out every day. You can't do that by Illinois law. So the Secretary of State has got this hotline asking for people to send in tips. Again, this is about accountability. If there is no way to identify the people in the car because their faces are covered, they do not have a name badge, there is no ID, the car has no license plate, there is no way to hold them accountable when there's wrongdoing.
Speaking of accountability, let's listen to a video statement from Chicago's Archbishop Cardinal Blaise Cupich. This was released on Tuesday.
Families are being torn apart. Children are left in fear. And communities are shaken by immigration raids and detentions. These actions wound the soul of our city. Let me be clear. The church stands with migrants.
Yeah, pretty strong statement there of solidarity, Revy. Any thoughts on what impact that could have on immigration policies?
I think it was something you would expect to hear from the Catholic Church, and the Catholic Church has played a very big role in terms of civil rights protections in Chicago over the years. We've had stories of international import of people being protected by the church. I'm not surprised at all. Obviously, Cardinal Cupich is a is an ally of the new Chicago Pope, and the Chicago Pope, I should say, Pope Leo the 14th. I still can't get over that story. I can't tell right. you how interesting that
our
story
Pope
is.
Our Pope is from here.
Our Pope is a Sox fan.
Right.
He obviously has a long-standing tradition of fighting for the underdog and for taking care of the poor and for the dispossessed and the classic clients of the church. And so I'm not surprised to hear this at all from Blaise Cupich, and it's interesting.
Religious leaders, other ones, are urging the federal government to allow detainees at the West Suburban Broadview processing facility to access their religious rights. What's been going on?
Yeah, so there were a group of clergy who wanted to offer communion inside the ICE processing facility. They were denied that opportunity to go inside and offer communion. The Department of Homeland Security said they didn't give them enough notice. It was too short notice to make that possible. But, nobody has been allowed inside the facility there to look at conditions. Lawmakers have made repeated requests to go inside, and no one has been in there. And we've done quite a lot of reporting about the conditions inside being pretty inhumane, overcrowded, lack of food, lack of water. And, Broadview is not a detention center. It's a processing center, but the Department of Homeland Security says they adhere to the standards that are applied at detention centers around the country. And you are entitled to, adequate space for practicing your faith, access to a chaplain or a religious leader.
Right.
And so these are things that people inside that facility are entitled to.
And that's not been happening. Yeah. An app that's called Ice Block. It's been pulled from the Apple Store. It was an app helping people alert others when they see Border Patrol agents nearby. People are getting creative, Ravi, as they try to block these immigration raids. We're hearing about whistles being used, right, to warn neighbors about ICE sightings, shouting at Border Patrol agents, videotaping the arrests, making sure that kids can safely get to school. What do you think?
It seems to be a society kind of rising up. And to your point, Jake, to see the level of street-level organization that seems to be coming from members of city council and their offices is remarkable. And whatever you may think of the policies driving all this, one thing I'm always struck by is when there is crisis in Chicago. I've seen this in other cities that I've lived in. When there's crisis and there seems to be an erosion of the basic rules around how we live together, say like there's a lot of crime or what have you, it's amazing to see how other neighbors and friends and people pitch in. And you often see, I know it's a bit trite, but you often see the best of humanity when humanity is facing some of the more negative and worse kind of situations. And I think this is an example of that. And Chicago is a city of neighborhoods. Chicago is a place where kind of, I remember former Governor Pat Quinn used to always say, you go to some event, he'd always say, we're all in this together. And it's this kind of silly thing.
And now it actually feels like it.
It kind of feels that way.
It feels like it.
Whatever side of it you're on.
Lots of stories, too, of people getting groceries for folks who are scared to leave their house.
Yeah. It's a sign of Chicago's sense of community and a sign of that I am my brother's keeper.
Yeah. Despite all the effort people are making to help their neighbors who might be at risk, though, Alexandria, some are choosing to return to their native countries rather than risk staying here and getting deported. What do we know about these so-called self-deportations?
Yeah, I mean, this is when you think about someone who has been here two decades, because we have heard from people who've been here years, made a life here, established roots, own a home.
Yeah.
But I think, what in our reporting we've heard is that the fear of the family getting separated, one member perhaps being deported and the rest of the family left here, the fear of being sent to a detention center based on, the reporting we hear about the conditions inside detention, people would rather pick up and leave on their own and travel on their own back to their home countries. And we've heard this particularly in the Mexican community here.
Yeah.
Someone who runs a workshop just sort of helping. Again, and it's not just as simple as, pack a suitcase and I'm gone.
Oh, no, it's a whole process.
Right. And when you are going voluntarily back to Mexico, there are programs in place for people who are deported. But if you are going back to Mexico, there's actually a pretty complicated bureaucratic system you have to navigate to access, basic services, be able to work.
And it costs money.
It does. It does. So I think it's a really painful decision that some families are making, really to keep their families together.
Yeah. This is In the Loop. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and you are tuned in to the weekly news recap. Today, we take you behind the headlines of the week's top local stories. And we're doing something a little special. We are here in WBEZ's performance studio in front of a live studio audience. That's right. Before the break, we took a deep dive into the immigration arrests and protests that have been happening. But there's a lot more news to get to.
The country's food assistance program, known as SNAP, could be in serious jeopardy in just 2 weeks.
SNAP isn't negotiable, and we really should be trying to do as much as we can to protect it.
There are some workers who obviously are struggling with finances and will struggle with finances, but there are many of them saying for now they think it's worth the trade-off.
We must respond to his tax cuts for the ultra-rich with new taxes on billionaires and large corporations.
Governor J.B. Pritzker announced he does not support what's called a head tax.
It penalizes the very thing that we want, which is we want more employment.
Our panel today to help break down these stories, Jake Sheridan, City Hall reporter for the Chicago Tribune, Revy Bashwal, anchor at ABC7, and Alexandra Solomon, who's WBEZ's Race, Class, and Communities senior editor. Now, last week, Mayor Johnson delivered his budget address, and this week, a month-long marathon of budget hearings got underway. Jake, the mayor's budget includes more than $617 million in new taxes. These are aimed mostly at the city's wealthiest residents, as well as big companies. How did the alders respond to that, though?
You know, there are a number of different responses that are happening, because there's so many big pieces, because the gap is so, so big. Our budget is quite
over
wonky.
A billion.
Yeah. But, you know, I think a couple of the things started to get a look from aldermen this week. One isn't a new tax. It's the surplusing of TIF districts, which are basically these districts around the city that siphon off some of the property tax money that's increased in areas. And aldermen had a lot of issues with that. It was surprising to see how many aldermen were criticizing the amount of the surplus, which mm-hmm. they see as kind of a one-time fix. It was used last year. But also, many aldermen, especially in the west and south sides, were concerned that projects in their wards that weren't approved yet, but that were kind of in the pipeline, in their heads at least, and in conversations for years, would be stalled or canceled because of that. So mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things that could come down. You know, the head tax, of course, as we heard Governor Pritzker come out against.
Yeah, how does that corporate head tax work exactly?
So it's a per head tax. It would be $21 per employee on corporations over 100 people in its current form. You know, a similar tax existed. It was about a fourth as big in the past. Mayor Rahm Emanuel took that tax away. So it's been something that's existed in Chicago before. But, you know, we've seen a huge opposition from business. Mm-hmm. The Civic Committee of the Commercial Club came out and, you know, really strongly opposed this measure. And those are folks with money. Those are folks with the funds to fight in the public against the mayor here in election season two. And of course, the governor speaking with business leaders came out in strong opposition to that tax, too.
Yeah, he said the tax, quote, penalizes the very thing that we want, which is we want more employment in the city of Chicago. And it makes it very hard to attract companies from outside of Chicago to come into Chicago and harder for companies that are already here to stay. Revy, do you think that's a fair argument? Because Mayor Johnson is, of course, saying this corporate head tax, it's only going to affect 3% of businesses.
Right. It's more the soak the rich kind of an approach. But, you know, $21 a head, you know, over a year, it's $252 per employee times what, 100 employees. Do the math. It adds up very quickly.
Yeah.
And it does go to essentially financing a range of social initiatives by the mayor. So one there was a very interesting opinion in the Chicago Tribune in your paper talking about how a Democratic socialist who's running for mayor in New York is not talking like the mayor of Chicago in terms of what we need to do to bring some fiscal sanity, but also having this kind of social programs and the social awareness that a civic government.
You're talking about Mamdani.
Talking about Mamdani, exactly. Zohran Mamdani, who is arguably going to be the next mayor of New York, and that the business community in Chicago needs to hear those kinds of sort of reform-minded initiatives from this mayor to actually have a conversation about how do we square the circle between right and left.
Yeah.
And so that would be interesting to hear. I think that debate will carry on. We've heard about a head tax forever in Chicago. As you say, we've had one before. It was removed. The business community will fight very hard.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's see if this actually goes through. Jake, there's also a tax that Johnson's recommending on social media companies.
You know, a lot of aldermen this week have been asking his budget director and his CFO, will that tax actually work? You know, is that a legal thing? And there was an interesting exchange Tuesday where the CFO of the city wasn't totally clear on what the law department's stance on that was. You know, there's a real possibility that tax just like isn't legally possible.
And how does he want it to work exactly?
It's not really clear what the details okay. are on that. I mean, it hasn't been really well explained, I think. But, it's going to be interesting to see what sticks. I think one sense that I have with that tax, with the TIF and aldermen's pushback against that, and of course with this head tax too and the opposition rising there, is that the budget negotiations haven't really started in earnest. There are a lot of really big pieces that absolutely will shift. And so as these hearings continue every day for every department on the line items, those line items aren't going to be the line items that pass. There's no way. This is what we saw last year. It's what we see every year in Chicago. But with the budget gap this big, big changes are going to happen.
Yeah, Alexandra, I mean, these taxes on businesses and the wealthy, and these are, of course, as we've said, Johnson's effort to close that massive gap, right? Like, what else are you going to do if you're trying to say, I won't raise property taxes or cut services? But overall, do you think that Chicago voters are going to view these as fair taxes?
I mean, I think, you know, there's going to be a range of opinions with Chicago
voters. Are folks going to be happy with Mayor Johnson?
I don't know for sure. I think, you know, more business-minded people may not be right happy about the head tax idea. I think the social media tax, I'm actually really curious to see how Chicagoans feel about that, because people have this sort of love-hate relationship, I think, with social media. Small businesses rely on it, yet we all are aware of sort of the mental health consequences that come with, you know, addiction to social media, and this tax, if it's legal, you know, would in theory put money to pay for mental health care by taxing users. So I do think, you know, and there's a lot of anger at big tech, I think, that people have. So I'm curious to see how Chicagoans actually feel about the social media tax.
Yeah. Well, I got a quick fact check for you, Jake. Mayor Johnson says the budget's in response to federal funding cuts. Let's listen to this.
The Trump attack on our city is an economic attack on our city. The harsh reality is we're dealing with the Trump cuts. The Trump cuts to public health, the cuts to public safety, to Medicaid, to SNAP, to services that address homelessness and drug addiction, his cuts to violence prevention, his cuts to public education and transportation. This is not rhetoric, this is a reality.
Is what he's saying there accurate?
You know, it's complicated. I think the biggest problem in Chicago's budget, which everyone probably knows about in this room, is the massive pension debt that we have, right? And that's been there forever. It's not going away anytime soon. But it's true to an extent. You know, when the federal government poured in money during COVID to the city, there were a lot of programs added, like those violence interruption efforts that the mayor really strongly supports. And when you grow the government with that kind of surplus and then that money goes away, you have to find new money, permanent money to pay for those things. You know, whether that's Trump's fault or the fault of the city for adding too much, it's a political debate, but
I think that experience has shown us that wherever there is leverage that the Trump administration can identify that's in favor of their policy direction, they're going to use it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to hide behind this might upset some people or this is too tough a line. We're seeing it with the federal government shutdown and SNAP benefits.
Yeah, let's talk about that. The shutdown.
I mean, this is about people's food on their table.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's dragging into week four. You're absolutely right, Revy. I mean, government workers, they're starting to miss their first full paycheck, right? Today's Friday. They were supposed to get paid today, a lot of them. I had a woman on the program earlier this week who worked with the Social Security Administration, who says, you know, the way her bank is set up, normally her check would hit on a Wednesday. She woke up that morning, no check.
Can you imagine? We've got a live studio audience here.
Can you imagine?
Can you imagine not getting your paycheck?
Boo, they said. Boo, they're not in favor.
Everyone's face just fell.
Yeah, we talked with an air traffic controller as well. We've already seen some flight delays and cancellations. This could lead to more, he says, and he assured us flying, though, is still safe. It's still safe.
And this was the pressure point the last time the Trump administration shut down the government in 2017. It was about 35 days in, and most analysts say, political analysts say, that it is when the air traffic controllers started to say, we can't do this anymore. We can't live without being paid. And the skies, traffic in the skies started to change, or maybe people's idea about what was safe in the skies was changing, have you. That whole sort of area of concern, when that became a real pain point, that seems to be in line with when the Trump administration moved a little bit more in terms of negotiation and getting the government open again. We'll see. We're not there yet. That's, 5 weeks in, so we're still about a week short of that. So let's see what happens over the next week on that.
You know, Ravi, I think you made a really good point that the Trump administration is going to keep trying to take money from the city. You know, we saw the city sue this week, actually, over money that they fear will be withheld. The Trump government is blocking emergency preparedness, anti-terrorism funding if the city has any diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. So, you know, while it's you know, debated to what extent the Trump funding cuts are defining the Chicago budget right now, it is totally possible that that becomes and likely, frankly, that becomes a bigger issue for the city.
Yeah. Right, and creating a contrast like that for the political consumption of all of us as Americans is part of the MO of the Trump administration to have that kind of a debate and have it at a crisis level, DEI versus budgets. It's remarkable. So when there's leverage, and Trump is a businessman, I mean, he's always been about who's got the leverage in any negotiation and using it as much as possible.
Well, Alexandra, before we take a pause, I mean, Revy brought up SNAP, right? Yeah. And we know that local food pantries here, they're bracing for what could be just a catastrophic result here of the government shutdown. People are losing their SNAP benefits.
Right. And I'm going to throw out a few numbers here because I think this is a case where numbers really matter. So that's 1.9 million people in Illinois will be without those benefits. 45% of those households are households with kids. 44% are households with people with disabilities. It's $350 million in benefits that won't be received in the state. And, you know, a lot of the food banks are, again, they're coping with sort of this crisis that's already been in place. People, you know.
Yeah. But they're preparing for a very real possibility here.
They are. And, you know, they're encouraging people to, like, have a plan and find a food bank nearby where they can go to. One of the unfortunate, you know, effects of all the immigration enforcement, though, is that people are afraid to come out to food banks as well. Some are trying to do home delivery, but these are small staff. So it's a big problem.
All right, before the break, we took a deep dive into budget hearings at City Hall, but there's still a few more issues to cover with local journalists Jake Sheridan, Revy Baishwal, and Alexandra Solomon. And we are doing it in front of a live studio audience. Wonderful faces here in the studio. All right, let's dig in. It's not just the federal government and the city of Chicago that is short on cash, Revy. You had a great report this week about the beleaguered suburb of Harvey. It's also in dire financial straits.
It's a tough situation in Harvey where they've had to lay off so much of their municipal staff. It's a small town. They bring in about $30 million in tax revenue. Mm-hmm. They spend $50 million. That can't go on for a long time. They are now over $160 million in debt. The mayor of the city of Harvey, Christopher Clark, he took over from Mayor Eric Kellogg, 7 years ago, and has been sounding the alarm forever that this fiscal situation is unsustainable. And so what happened on Monday is that, despite itself, the mayor was able to get an ordinance passed at Harvey City Council calling where they are saying to themselves, we are a financially distressed city.
Yeah.
Please, state of Illinois, come in, look at our books, help us out. There apparently is a bill on ready to go to provide immediate help in terms of funding for the city, in terms of police and fire and some other required services from a municipality that would pass in the next legislative session in Springfield if this fiscally distressed ordinance passed. So that says a lot for a city to say that about itself and ask for that kind of help. But we've seen lack of proper governance in southern in southern South Chicago municipalities many, many, many times.
Oh, yeah.
And this is the latest of that. But I, having gone down there and listened in on that city council meeting, it's astounding to see how big the problem is. I mean, the numbers are just staggering. They don't have the industrial infrastructure to be able to pay that back in any kind of meaningful way in the next little while. And so as a result, fire and pension, fire and police and their pension agreements and things that people rely on, not paychecks, but other things that they rely on are being called into question.
Well, another story in our state that we are definitely keeping an eye on here. Opening arguments began in the case against former Sangamon County Sheriff's Deputy Sean Grayson, who fatally shot Springfield resident Sonia Massey in her home. This is after she called 911 reporting a prowler outside. Prosecutors are calling the killing unlawful, and they're saying Grayson shot her because he was, quote, mad at her. Grayson's been charged with first-degree murder, aggravated battery with a firearm, and official misconduct. He faces life in prison if he's found guilty. Any thoughts, Ravi, real quick, on just the wider, even national implications of a tragedy like this in terms of police reform or just how officers are trained to handle a mental health call?
That's been the case with this case since the beginning. There's obviously very dramatic video of the encounter. And what we heard in testimony this week was that Officer Grayson's partner did not apprehend that they were in the kind of mortal trouble that Grayson said that they were, and which is the reason why he shot her. So when your own partner says, hey, it wasn't as bad a situation as to require that kind of activity, that's going to, I think that piece of evidence is going to be very strong in all this. But I think that the nation's watching this as well, because the video is there, and you see someone who maybe is having a mental health moment or what have you, and you see how stark the power imbalance is, and people are going to have opinions about that.
Yeah.
And obviously the racial component to it is a big part of it, and I expect this to, one way or the other, to be continued to be a matter of debate around.
Right. It's just so unfortunate that at the end of the day, a life was lost as a result of that interaction. Let's bring it back to Chicago, Jake. Alderpersons are voicing frustration. This is over some closed bridges. I know you were at a city council hearing to hear complaints.
Yeah, so this kind of stole the show at day two of budget hearings.
Bridges stole bridges. The show. Wow.
You know, you would think that everyone would be talking about money, but so aldermen, especially downtown and in the near north side, were really upset over the simultaneous closures of bridges on Lake, on Chicago, on Cortland. State Street also has an emergency repair going on, so all those are shut down. They're saying people can't get anywhere. There's tons of log jams. Alderman Brian Hopkins called it, quote, a major failure. He pulled out a fact. He said this is the most bridges that have been closed down since the Chicago fire.
Wow.
And he was irate. A lot of aldermen were. They said they're getting tons of calls from constituents, and it's a massive issue for them.
Alexandra, your team took a deep dive into the health of our rivers and Lake Michigan. We heard Mary Dixon tease it just a moment ago. Give us the latest, though, on that fight to keep invasive carp under control.
Yeah, so there's a big project near Joliet. This is a barricade that is going to be constructed between the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the state of Illinois, and the state of Michigan. It employs all kinds of technologies to keep the carp from making their way to Lake Michigan. There's a bubble wall that sort of throws bubbles out. It kind of disorients the carp, and then I think they turn around is the idea. There's
we're getting giggles from the audience.
The acoustic shocks. There are all these techniques to sort of keep the carp out, and the state recently acquired an additional piece of land that's needed to complete this barrier that they hope is going to work. Now the next step is this land may be contaminated because it was there was a site of a former coal site of a coal plant. So the state's got to clean up any land before it can turn it over to the Army Corps of Engineers. So that's the next step in this process. This has been a like decades in the making process.
Yeah, I can tell. And our Juan Pablo Ramirez Franco has been all over it. So he'll be on Say More at 10 o'clock for more on that story. Please stay tuned right here to WBEZ. Now, a couple other stories here. As many as 16 graduate students at Northwestern may lose their student status for refusing the university's mandatory anti-bias training. They allege the section on anti-Semitism discriminates against Palestinian and Arab students. Now, the students filed a lawsuit against Northwestern last week to block the disciplinary measure, but a judge denied that request. finding that the university did not engage in discrimination. So we're going to keep an eye for how that issue progresses. Sadly, we also have to report a heartbreaking tragedy. This is a tragedy for former state senator and Republican gubernatorial candidate Darren Bailey. His son, daughter-in-law, and two grandchildren died in a helicopter accident in Montana. Now, Bailey ran for governor in 2022, and the accident just comes weeks after he announced his plans to run for the Republican nomination for governor a second time. So, of course, our condolences go out to his entire family. So we've now reached the part of the recap where I like to ask you sort of what you're working on next, maybe what's coming up this weekend. Ravi, I'm looking at you. What are you watching tonight?
The World Series.
Any baseball?
I gotta just say, Chicago. I'm from Toronto. Everyone knows that. I've got ABC News rooting, I think, for the Toronto Blue Jays who are going into.
Well, I still have work to do. I need Chicago Public Media to get behind me.
That's
here.
Right, because yes. Chicago and Toronto are sister cities.
Yeah.
And there's a reason that we're kind of the same kind of.
So,
city,
colleagues so. In the room and the ones listening, come on, wear your Blue Jay shirts.
Let's go. And I think obviously we're going to be watching. we're going to be watching the federal. Deployment as it continues to evolve, especially as it goes into the loop. Apparently, that is where we're going to start to see more federal agents doing their thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's certainly where our studio is, and I will see that. And it will be very interesting to see how that whole process kind of evolves over the next couple of weeks, because it's not over. It's not over by a long shot.
Yeah. Any stories you think, Jake, were underreported this week, or what's really filling your cup this week? Because I know you've got budget stuff. Yes.
Yeah.
So what else?
I'm holding my breath for the National Guard decision in the Supreme Court. I mean, I know we talked about it already, but that could just totally reorient. I mean, if the National Guard is allowed to come into this city, it changes everything immediately. The intensity we feel now.
Yeah.
Gets a lot bigger.
I mean, do we think that will happen potentially?
It's a conservative court. They've mm-hmm. made a lot of pro-Trump decisions this year. I mean, and they don't. It's not a permanent decision. I mean, they could give him a couple weeks.
And look what they said about Portland, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's something that we need to take a look at. That there is that the Trump administration, the president has the prerogative to make these kinds of decisions.
Right, and the Supreme Court is deferential. President deferential to the president.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What is on your radar for next week, Alexandra?
Well, certainly the National Guard. We're also watching a hearing that's coming later today. This is a case that the National Immigrant Justice Center and the ACLU brought before the courts. This is about, people being arrested without due process, without warrants.
Mm-hmm.
It's 1,800 people. And the judge has ordered ICE to, provide weekly reports and information about each of these warrantless arrests, and they haven't. So there's a hearing. I'm going to see what happens there. So that's something we're going to be watching.
Very important stuff. Well, that is it for the weekly news recap. My thanks to WBEZ's Alexandra Solomon, Ravi Baishwal of ABC7, and Jake Sheridan of the Chicago Tribune. And thank you to our amazing live studio audience who spent the entire hour with us here. Thank you all so much. Yay! Fantastic. Glad to have you. Come back anytime.